Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Audience, Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. We are back. Hope you had an amazing weekend. I was in the desert all weekend. I desperately needed it. I hope you all are focusing on self-care this year. I know for some it's a really annoying slung around buzzword, but it's really, really important. We overwork and we don't always focus on self-care. And remember, self-care are those things that make us feel nourished and relaxed. They are not productivity based. Often things like running and yoga in the gym are not self-care. They're good for you, but they can be further depleting. And in fact, sometimes self-care is not engaging in those things or any activities. Often self-care is doing nothing, laying on the couch, binge watching shows, eating your favorite foods, sleeping in, taking a nap, taking a bath, going for a walk, laying in the grass. I mean, a lot of self-care is often things that are the opposite of productivity. We're overworked, we're tired. It's not things that are more depleting. So hope you all take care of yourselves. Just a little reminder. All right, let's get into some stuff. I think this is really, really, really important. Selena Gomez, she says that while dating Justin Bieber, she was a victim of emotional abuse. Now, I don't know the facts, so I don't really want to focus on whether or not that happened or what that means. I do, though, want to talk about emotional abuse, because some people still culturally believe that if you aren't physically hit or injured, that abuse has not happened, or you're not in an abusive relationship. And emotional and psychological abuse is sometimes even more detrimental because it can go unrecognized and be more insidious and pervasive. Now, before I get into what emotional abuse would even look like, I just want you to know that this is about us examining both the people we're with, but also ourselves. So it's an assessment. Am I someone who's emotionally abusive? And if so, I want to work on it. If I'm with someone who is, I need to call that out. Let them know it's no longer acceptable. And if they're willing to work on that and change that and do the work, all's well. But if not, it is time to leave. Because if you're in a physical or emotional relationship that's abusive, you are allowed to get the heck out. All right, so what does emotional abuse look like? It's when someone puts you down or humiliates you, whether in private or in front of others. Because again, a healthy relationship is someone where we can fight, disagree, but they never put us down. That is the abusive part. There's no need when frustrated or angry to attack someone or put them down. So it also goes with name-calling. Name-calling is abusive. It does eat away at someone's self-worth and self-esteem, and it's a really horrible weapon. And this stuff does impact people. So again, if you are someone who, when you're angry or upset, name calls or puts down your partner and other people, you are emotionally abusive, do that work. Apologize for it. Be better. Find new tools. And if you're in a relationship with someone who does that, call that out. Also, someone wanting to go through your phone. We are allowed as adults to have privacy and boundaries. No one has a right to go through your things. If you're in a relationship with someone where you feel the need to do that, you need to talk to them, share with them your struggles. Because you need to either work on learning how to trust, or you need to be only dating and in relationships with the people who are worthy of trust. So get into some couples therapy, do the work, work on addressing the issues, rebuilding that trust. Also, someone deciding where you can go, where you can't go, who you can go with, who you can't go with, what you can wear, what you can't wear, that is also psychological and emotional abuse. As adults, we get to have autonomy and decide where we go, when we go, and what we wear, right? Also, when they try to isolate you from friends and family, or if they're always accusing you of doing something wrong, those are really important, powerful signs of emotional abuse. All right. Heavy stuff, swooping into something a little lighter, but really phenomenal. For those that have family members or loved ones that have autism or Asperger's, Sesame Place, it's now the world's first and only autism certified theme park. For those that aren't familiar, Sesame Place, obviously connected to Sesame Street, it is an East Coast theme park. And I'd like to see more of this. So basically, it's officially autism certified. What does that mean? That the theme park has gotten qualification, and at least 80% of the park staff has received specialized training in order to meet the needs of all children, especially those with special needs. That is stunning, because that is rare. Teachers don't often have that. People working at a theme park absolutely don't, but 80% of the staff at least has received specialized training. That is huge and important because people with psychological or mental differences need special treatment. And it's important if you're going to be working with those individuals, especially at a theme park with children, have a better understanding in areas of communication, how to work with people with different motor skills, sensory and emotional awareness. So they also offer, I love this, sensory guides. And that will be available to help parents plan activities based on their child's specific needs. So if you can get there and that's where you want to plan a vacation, what a great place to take your child who might have special needs, because this is a place that really centers that. And I think more theme parks should be open to doing that. It's special and really, really, really important. And finally, man, this is interesting. Grieving with Google Street View. So some individuals, while going through their grieving and mourning process, are basically using Google Street View, which maps out streets in real time. Well, it's not in real time. They map out streets that had been in real time. And so when you go on that page, they're showing shots that are from before, and individuals have been able to find shots of their loved ones who have passed on the street, going for a jog, walking down the block. So for some, it can be a little stunning and overwhelming and upsetting. And for others, it's really heartwarming to experience and see them again. This kind of came out of a Twitter thread, but people were sharing their stories of finding their deceased friends and family members on Google Street View. I haven't looked into it. For me, I don't know that I necessarily need to go back and find that, but I like that it's a resource for some individuals where that's important. And finally, stop Googling your symptoms. Oh man, I love the internet because people can access information and resources, educate themselves, empower themselves, but you can often find whatever you're looking for, and that can work against you, where you can keep looking and looking until you're able to diagnose yourself, and that can increase anxiety. And so I am definitely all about, again, people empowering themselves, get some information, education, but go to specialists and experts and present the information and process it with them, because a lot of things can erroneously come out of assumptions that are made when you are doing that. So anyway, do the work, empower yourself, but take it to an expert, get some more advice. Question of the night. As always, it's up on our Loveline IG page, so head on over there and hit that up. And later we'll be sliding the DMs. If you got a DM, go to our Loveline IG page. That's where our DMs come from. And you will get your question answered on air. Or you can slide over to mine, Dr. Donahue. Hit us up, though, or you can give us a call, 833-LOVE-001. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page, so weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. But tonight we're going to talk a little bit about some trans issues. We were talking about this on Thursday's show last week. So if you go to wearechannelq.com, you can get the podcast version of that. And we had actress and activist Jocelyn DeFries on to talk about what's going on with Trump and the hashtag We Are Here. And one of the things I brought up last Thursday at that segment was how South Dakota lawmakers just voted to send doctors to jail for helping trans kids. Now, this is really heartbreaking because South Dakota's House of Representatives on Wednesday is the first in the country to greenlight a bill that prohibits gender-affirming medical care for transgender children. This is a big deal because it would make doctors that help children out, it would make it a class one misdemeanor, and that could be anything from $2,000 fine up to a year in jail. And what's really heartbreaking is the bill is saying that it is medical experimentation, and the author of the bill has compared doctors who provide gender-affirming care to Nazis. This is disgusting, and this is violent. Transgendered individuals are still highly oppressed and targeted in our culture, and they have a life expectancy of 34 years old. That is not okay. That is not okay that an individual, based on their gender transformation, their gender affirmation, that is going to decrease their life expectancy. Now, what usually is centered around this argument is puberty blockers. And that's a lot of what we're talking about. We're talking about gender affirming care because this bill would be about individuals under the age of 16. Now, we talked about this also on Loveline prior, that children do know what gender they are. And it is important to support a child in their journey and how they feel most comfortable and confident. It is traumatic to force a child to engage in a gender presentation that is most comfortable for you. Good parenting is supporting your child's journey. horrible parenting, violent, oppressive, traumatic parenting, is when you force your child to meet your needs. That is not the job of a parent, and that is a lot of mental health issues tied to it that will occur in childhood and also down the road. Now, puberty blockers are proven to decrease suicide risk for transgender individuals. That is important. Now, the issue is around what impact this has. Please know that natural puberty will resume once the injection or the implant wears off or is removed. This is something that essentially sets puberty on pause, which is a necessary thing to happen for an individual to explore their gender identity and decide what is going to be true for them. This is not something that's dangerous. This is a reversible medication, injection, or implant. And these prevent puberty from happening. Now, we know for individuals that are transgender that to have to go through puberty and have their body forced or allowed to present as something other than who they are is very, very traumatic. And putting that on pause is healthy and all the other affirming care. And so what's disappointing is that politicians are not psychologists, therapists, or doctors, and they're weighing in on this, and they shouldn't be because they're not looking at the research and they don't have any experience themselves with these individuals. I am fortunate enough where I was raised with a lot of transgender individuals around me when I was a teenager. That word and term did not exist, and there was far less support for them. But I was around them, and they were the most honest, authentic, courageous people. And I'm blessed for them having shown me what authenticity and truth looks like. And there's a lot of beauty that came out of that. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that there's more support and care these days. So we're going to keep tracking what's going on. It's consistently heartbreaking. But I also wanted to, just in support and visibility, talk about the celebrities who proudly have come forward and talked about their own transgender children, because unfortunately, celebrityism has so much power and has a lot of impact on what we normalize in our culture. That's fortunate when it's done in a right way. It's unfortunate when they're supporting really horrible values. So let's go through some of them. I think this is really stunning. Charlize Theron has come forward talking about her 7-year-old daughter. And now the daughter has been introduced to the world as male. That is stunning. So this is her son, a beautiful, stunning picture. Also, Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union have a trans child. Angelina Brad Pitt famously do. Cynthia Nixon. And then there's some individuals I wasn't aware of. Warren Beatty and Annette Bening. And also Cher. And, you know, again, I'm always very supportive of the individuals that are out and proud and loud, whether they're a family member or an individual themselves, because, again, we live in a culture that makes that very unsafe. And I'm constantly tracking, looking at the assaults and the murders and the danger. And so we as a culture are responsible, especially us cis-identified individuals. We're the ones that profit from transphobia. We're the ones that really maintain it. And so it's on our shoulders to end it and eliminate it. It shouldn't be on the shoulders of those that are harmed and victimized to undo that violence and that oppression. It should be on us, the ones that create it and engage it and perpetuate it. So, you know, here at Loveline, we're always supportive of any individual's human rights, because just the mere existence means you have rights. It should. But especially for those that are of any kind of minority identity or status. So anyway, sending love to y'all. We're here for you. We're going to put some of these articles up on wearechannelq.com so you can check it out and read more. We definitely got to have Jocelyn back on the show to kind of continually track what's going on in this journey. But again, with South Dakota, I mean, what they're trying to do is, this is the first in the country. So I'm really hoping that we can undo this, because I don't want this to set a precedent in, you know, the time of Trump, when we're constantly rolling back the rights of sexual and gender minorities. So anyway, we'll keep tracking that. It's quite heartbreaking. So, all right. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page, and slide into our DMs at Loveline IG page as well. And that is where you can give us your questions that we'll read on the air. All right. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Now it's time for some news recaps. We've got Stephen Horbelt, executive editor of Hornet, with us. What's going on, Stephen?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good. How's the holiday season starting off for you?
Not too bad. I can't complain.
A lot of people are starting to panic, but I'm trying to remind everyone that the holiday season is supposed to be fun. So what do you got?
Well,
for?
Yeah. Yeah, so here I am with a bit of a downer. Of a
Stephen, always ruining our night. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. What do you got?
So today's story involves the world's most popular video platform. Everyone knows it, YouTube. And it's important to note that YouTube has long had a tenuous relationship with the LGBTQ community. So for years, queer YouTubers have complained that they're not treated fairly on the platform for a couple reasons. They say that their content is unfairly restricted. So years ago, it was discovered that millions of videos by queer YouTubers were actually only able to be seen in restricted mode.
And do we know why that came to be? Because I did hear that. Why did that come to be? Do we know?
It could have. I'm sure that it was blamed on an algorithm issue.
Okay.
Or that content was being unnecessarily censored, or they weren't able to monetize their content because it was deemed inappropriate, even though there wasn't sexual content. What happens a lot is that if gay or queer or trans is used in a headline, then the algorithms will say, okay, well, this must be sexual content.
Right? Okay, so right there, it's the problematic hypersexualization of anything gay, right? Because gayness is not always
absolutely
rooted in sex. Jeez.
Absolutely. Oof, okay. Absolutely. And then the other reason that LGBTQ YouTubers really have beef with the platform has always been that they've dealt with harassment and bullying on the platform, and they don't feel like YouTube has ever really addressed it appropriately. And so now, regarding that last issue of harassment and bullying, YouTube announced that it's going to be updating its policies to better protect LGBTQ people, other minority users, right? So they released a statement saying that under the new harassment policies, malicious insults are not allowed based on race, gender, sexuality. They've banned threats, implied or outright, which you would think would probably already need to be part of the policies.
Yeah.
And then they've said that repeat offenders are going to lose the ability to monetize their videos on YouTube.
Oh, I like that one. Hit them where it counts, the money.
Right. Well, so this all, it sounds like great progress, right? It sounds like we're finally getting somewhere. But not everyone thinks that's the case, specifically some of the leading LGBTQ YouTubers who are basically saying that this whole thing is too little too late. And one person in particular who has kind of been at the center of this whole discussion about YouTube and LGBTQ content creators is named Carlos Maza. And he's a journalist who works for the new site Vox.
Okay.
And he has for a while now spoken out about getting harassed by one right-wing YouTuber in particular named Steven Crowder.
Okay, so really quickly, though, that's interesting to me. And tonight we're talking with Stephen Horbelt, the executive editor of Hornet. We're talking about what's going on at YouTube. That's interesting because I would have assumed that it was coming from these unnamed, unknowable trolls, but it's coming from other YouTubers with big platforms. That's fascinating to me.
It is. So this is one of the kind of most egregious instances of this happening. So this right-wing YouTube creator who has a huge subscriber base, huge number of followers on the platform, in the past, he's actually called Carlos Maza names. Like, he called him a lispy queer in one of his videos.
Oof.
He called him a gay Mexican. He even wore a shirt in one of his videos that said, socialism is for fags, right?
Oh
so
God.
This guy is all in on the, you know, LGBT bullying. Just obviously a really nice guy. And so that on-camera harassment then resulted in all of the right-winger guys' fans harassing Carlos Maza. It was a mess, right? Death threats, everything that you can imagine. And so when Carlos Maza took what was happening to the higher-ups at YouTube, they basically looked at what happened and said, sorry, there's no policy violations here.
Wow.
This right-wing guy isn't doing anything wrong. And so many people saw that happen and saw it as a big blow to the LGBTQ community, because it seemed like if this, which was seemingly such a blatant case of anti-LGBTQ harassment, if this isn't against YouTube's policies, then what is?
Yeah, right? I mean, we're talking death threats. And also what's interesting is, and this is lost on some people that are outside of the LGBTQIA community, is that for those that are a minority status, anything that's representative, anything that's a resource is really powerful for them. And it normalizes, it helps them feel connected to something. And especially for people that live outside of any kind of urban metro city, for some, this is their only access to gay community. And so there's something really powerful about these people existing on YouTube.
It is. And when you look at the demos of a platform like YouTube, you know, a lot of these YouTube content creators, especially LGBT content creators, are younger, right? And their audiences are younger. So it is a very valuable resource for all of the queer community, but especially younger generations.
So we're feeling good about this, that what YouTube is doing, we think it's going to work?
Well, Carlos Maza has responded to these new YouTube policy updates, and he's basically calling them BS.
Okay.
And so he had a really great Twitter thread, and he said, and this is a quote, "YouTube loves to manage PR crises by rolling out vague content policies that don't actually enforce. They don't actually enforce. These policies only work if YouTube is willing to take down its most popular rule breakers, and there's no reason so far to believe that it is." And so that last line, I think, is really important because, you know, YouTube, there are a lot of hateful people who have huge platforms on YouTube. And so for YouTube to really, you know, enforce these anti-bullying, anti-harassment policies, they would have to get rid of a lot of people that they're not going to want to get rid of.
Oh, man. And again, it's so black and white. Like, we can literally monitor specific people's pages to see if they're following through on what they said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, bam. All right, Stephen Horbelt, where can people find you?
Find me at Hornet.com, Gay Social Network. Got a lot of news on there. Find us online. Find us in the app.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And let's keep an eye on that. I mean, you know, let's kind of track what winds up happening with that, because I think this is a really powerful, useful thing. Thank you so much, Stephen. Have an awesome night.
Absolutely. You too, Chris. Thanks.
Bye. All right. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com. All right. We're back. Now it's time to slide into those DMs. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Dear Dr. Chris, I identify as a heterosexual female. When I masturbate, I often picture myself as the role of a male having sex with a female. What does this mean? Is this normal? All right, y'all. It never go for normal, right? Always remember that. The goal is about you figuring out what feels good to you, what makes you thrive, what makes you feel whole, what's authentic, what's honest. Don't go for normal, especially because in our culture, what we call normal is not truly what is statistically normal. We know that like 75% of the culture is actually engaging in things that are very diverse and creative, aka pretty kinky. But we don't tend to call that normal. What we tend to call normal is actually a small statistical number. It's not the true average. So get away from the whole normal thing. Look, sex is supposed to be hot and fun, and your fantasies are whatever they are. You are allowed to fantasize about whatever feels good to you. That is the gift and beauty of fantasy. And also solo sexuality, aka masturbation, is that it's about you and yourself. And that is the safest place to explore all of your wild fantasies and arousal patterns and habits, because it's not real and it's not necessarily something you're ever going to engage in real time. And so that is the safe place to let your mind wander. So often we do that in our fantasy, is we embody roles of things that are just not necessarily possible to us. So you as a heterosexual female engaging while masturbating in the idea of playing the role of a male, that's exactly what masturbation and fantasy are about, is trying on all these different roles and behaviors. And so enjoy that. You know, I don't know what quote unquote male sexuality means for you, but whatever it means for you, that is what you're trying to embody. And that's why you're fantasizing about that. You know, the meaning of fantasy or even dreams is different for everyone. Whatever the symbol is, whatever the role is that you're trying to play or whatever you're fantasizing or dreaming about, you have to explore what adjectives, what meaning do I ascribe to that? And that's what I'm trying to be. And that's the space I'm trying to occupy. You can't look it up in these books and say, oh, whenever you dream of this, this is what it means for everyone. No, culturally, we have different experiences of all these different symbols and individually. So it doesn't matter what it means. We'll never fully know, but there's some attraction to whatever this role embodies for you. And that's what you're trying to occupy. So enjoy it. Don't overthink it. It doesn't matter if it's normal. Honor where your mind goes, and just let it be, y'all. You know what I mean? I mean, again, that is the beauty of fantasy. In fact, it's one of the things I had people try to even explore more of. You know, sexuality is so plastic, and that means that it's ever changing. We're constantly folding in new things that turn us on based on experiences we have, or things that happen to us, or things we see, or things that get brought forth while we're having sex with partners. We tend to get obsessed with this idea that, you know, our sexuality is about gender choice, and it's something we need to fully know. And once we have a label on it as, you know, we're gay, we're straight, or bi, that exploration is done. And none of that's true. Right? So much bigger than that. And it's always with us and ever evolving. So anyway, allow that, enjoy that. Don't try to make too much meaning out of it. People tend to wind up maybe possibly even shaming themselves when they try to really try to apply like a logic to it. They try to connect it to some kind of negative event or something like that. And you know, that's not necessarily often even true. So anyway, enjoy that. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we got the X-Files. And then later in the show, we'll be doing Question of the Night, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And right now, we got some X-Files with Wesley Woods.
What's up? How are you doing?
I'm actually doing good. You were saying that down south it's like -1 zillion degrees.
Well, I mean, basically it's like 25, and I don't like that ish.
Yeah, that's a mess. what do you got for us tonight?
So, you know, I was online doing the typical scrolling, wasting some time, and there was an article that caught my eye. Long story short, there is a woman down in South Africa who, 2 months before their sixth wedding anniversary, 6 years of marriage, okay? 2 months before it, breaks up with him and is now suing him for $600,000.
Why?
For being a homosexual.
So wait, do you know how she found out? Do we know that part?
So, you know, I did some more investigative work and read the article. she basically was... I'm assuming they've had conversations around it, and she made him go to their priest, and long story
exercise that homo demon, you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, and then she shared so much, like, secret and private information. Basically, the judge just threw it out and was like, how dare y'all try and use this tactic in privacy to out this man and then and steal $600,000 from him, essentially.
I want to know where she got that number from, because that's a chunk of money, first off. $600,000. Number two, talk about setting a standard for all sorts of things to sue someone for. Because if that did go through, next thing you know, people are going to be suing for $100,000 for like a lack of sex, a lack of romance. I can't with that.
Well,
stuff.
She was like emotional pain and psychological problems. And I was like, baby, I've had a lot of my exes that I could be suing for psychological problems too.
And them right back at you. Right back at you.
Goes, you know, both ways, boo boo.
But that's kind of the kind of world we live in right now, where people feel like they're owed money and can sue for anything. And relationships don't always go the way you want. And I feel bad that this person's heart was broken. But like, look, relationships are often hurting and getting hurt. Like, it's not for the faint of heart. You got to toughen up a little bit. He didn't do anything wrong. I mean, my God, it's hard to come out as gay. And you said this was in Africa, right?
Yeah, South Africa. It's a South African couple.
It's not always safe in some environments or with some couples, but I can't imagine.
Yeah, and, well, and not only that, it's like, oh my God, like, kind of kudos. Maybe there was something along the way that you helped evolve this human being into recognizing who they are. Like, don't discredit your relationship and maybe the journey to allow him to go on. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it's just sad, you know. Like, I mean, look at us. We ended our relationship almost 2 years ago, and you know, I adore you and you adore me, and that love has never changed. We just had to adjust our way of handling, of viewing and approaching things, you know.
But I do still have my lawyer working on a suit.
Okay, well, just so you know, now that I know that she can get $600,000 from him, I'm coming for you, boo.
Just so you know, really, I'm still working on that suit.
You know, it was over his out for his sexuality. So I'm like, oh, I got sexual traumas with Dr. Donahue.
Well, I mean, here's the whole thing also. And again, some people, they come to their, you know, sexual awakening later in life, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I still would have had some questions for her. Like, was, you know, was sex good from the beginning?
Okay, you ask the questions and I'll answer it.
Okay. So was sex good between the two of them from the door?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So she never had any inclination that maybe he wasn't into women?
I don't think that happened till later on in their marriage, maybe year four-ish by the sound of it, because I think they went through some couple counseling and they talked to their priest for a few years before all of this came to a head, and I guess the demon was not being cast out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of like the responsibility of people. Like, I respect that we live in a homophobic culture. There are still countries where people are literally murdered for being gay. Even here in America, there's still a lot of bias. There's still states that allow conversion therapy. There are people that are getting gay bashed.
Sure.
But I still want to, like, I guess, say to people, take some accountability for the fact that when you're in a relationship with someone, you impact them. And if you're still exploring your sexuality, that's awesome. Be where you are. Be who you are. Just let people know as soon as you know. Don't kind of, like, you know, pull it out last minute. And so I'm hoping he found out and told her as soon as possible. But, like,
I agree, because you have to hold space for both. You know, it's a lost an idea of a relationship. It's also, you know, I don't know. It's relationship doc.
Yeah. And it's and that's why, like, always also, because I always feel like I'm trying to, like, drop gems on everyone over everything. But, like,
we'll drop them. We enjoy them. I'll try to catch a few.
Just be safe enough to go to, because I think that's always the other thing I remind people. Like, you want people to come share with you things that might be hard to hear or very triggering. You have to be safe for them to go to. And so even though it might be something you don't want to hear, say thank you when they come to you. Like, thank you for caring enough to share that with me.
Are you talking to me right now? Because that's what I'm experiencing. Okay, thank you. Took my little free lesson from you for the night.
So are you currently having some relational issues that you're working through?
I'm not having relational issues with anyone, but other than myself.
are you currently defined as single?
No, I'm not.
Really?
Yeah, we have a lot to catch up about.
Oh wow, someone's in a relationship again.
Stop it.
Okay, we'll talk about that more off air.
But I do love what you said, because you do have to hold space to receive the message and also be release your ego enough to allow them to come and talk to you.
100%. Wesley, where can people find you?
Oh, you know, anywhere on social media, The Wesley Woods, the porn star, well, ex-porn star, not the church camp.
That's right. Dropping gems and a whole lot more on that Twitter.
Oh, yes,
it's a,
you know,
it's a colorful place.
Doing the Lord's work. If the Lord was, well, I'm doing Mary Magdalene's work, essentially.
Attaboy, that's good work. All right, coming up next, we got the question of the night. Still time to weigh in on that.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And of course, with Dr. Evan Goldstein, founder and president of Bespoke Surgical. So every time you come by, you always have a few things that kind of blow my mind. You know, as long as I've been doing this, you get to a point where you're like, oh, I think I kind of know it all. I heard it all. You're always like dropping these gems where I'm like, ah, great perspective. So some of the things that people bring up is anal sex. We're in this time culturally where that's kind of what everyone's asking about, gay, straight. So tips for tops.
Wow. So one is to become a bottom, because then you'll know what it feels like to be penetrated and kind of go from there. I think one of the things for us is really to understand the perspective of the bottom. And really to kind of guide and really be able to make the next move. This is like a play-by-play. And I think one of the things first is tons of lubrication, right? Also really making sure that people are choosing the right initial entry positions.
Okay.
Because I think that, you know, at the top, all they want to do is just lube it up, if that, and just stick it in. But that's just not how it rolls, right?
And talk about this, just the direction of an anal canal. I mean, they're not all going to be just a straight linear path, correct?
There's three sets of muscles.
Okay.
So you're basically going to hit three barriers before you get full relaxation. And it just takes time for those to relax. So I think as a good top, one is foreplay is so amazing beforehand, really getting good relaxation. If you want to do finger play, if you want to do toys before, just to get those three muscles set and relaxed and also really well lubricated.
Because I think something you said last time that was really profound and it was very permission giving was that people might want to practice for anywhere 2 to 4 weeks and that you can't say like tonight's the night, we're going all the way, we're going all in and expect it to necessarily be very relaxing and comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's specific to our community, the gay community, but even in the straight world, people think that you can go from nothing to 60 miles an hour and be able to take it. And the answer is no. So there needs to be a stage of pre-dilating. And hopefully the bottom is empowered and is able to do that beforehand. But as a newer bottom or as a top that's going to kind of really learn the right way to actually top, you need to anticipate that it's going to take some time. And I think communication is so key, making sure that you're not putting that person in a position where there is going to be injury and knowing like, hey, this is not going the way that it's supposed to go and how do I kind of take it back a little bit. But I think the key component is a lot of lube, getting that relaxation in those three sets of muscles. And like you said, the angulation is different in anybody. So yes, it should be a direct path for about 5 to 6 centimeters and then it takes an angle. So in certain people, having them in certain positions would make it either harder or simpler to actually engage.
Right. So it's going to be subjective because I know that was my experience where there's certain positions that you see or certain positions that you might eroticize in your mind. That doesn't necessarily mean that once you engage in it, that your body's going to kind of fall in line with that.
Totally. And I think that that's the interesting thing also is, you know, there's the prostate, there's the pelvic floor, there's the pelvic wall, and all of those can have different sensations. And especially from a top perspective too, what feels good for a top may not necessarily feel good from a bottom's perspective. And it's just changing the pelvic angle just a little bit. Either the top is changing or the bottom to now make it pleasurable for everybody.
Yeah, and I also just psychologically, I like the idea of a top bottoming just because one of the goals I have this year for people is to try to push and expand their quote-unquote orientation around what positions they prefer. Because we all, in theory, have the capacity to be tops and bottoms once we've worked through like penis size shame or power dynamics or homophobia or femphobia, like whatever it is. And so someone might realize in bottoming and preparation to top that this is actually more pleasurable than I thought or more comfortable with it. And then they become first.
Totally. And I think
that's a great place to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the realistic picture is just using toys on your own at your own speed, in your own room, by yourself, straight, gay, whatever, and slowly starting to see, hey, does it work? A lot of it will work from a pelvic floor perspective, even just for better defecating, you know, just being able to kind of understand that component. And then slowly, a lot of people come back and they're like, that was totally pleasurable. I'm so into it.
So I actually want to go back into the defecating piece. Yeah. Most of our listeners are probably like, no, please keep going. However, speak more to that, the connection between better defecation. What would that mean?
Well, it's just a lot of people are just super tight.
Okay.
You know, and all of our, you know, we sit all day long. That's where the contraction is. I always say the anal cavity is contracted 99.9% of the day, right? That's where the muscle is. So just learning how to relax will, just by using the small toys, et cetera, will then allow for proper defecating, proper positioning. What's the right way? You know, people talk a lot about the squatty potty.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And it changes the angle. It just changes it. You don't need the squatty potty. You could just put a couple of books there if you wanted to. But that angle may not be the best for everybody. And so it's just understanding that, using toys, using sex in the right way. And then you'll start to see that it'll really help relax the pelvic floor, help with defecating, and then hopefully transfer people into the sex world.
You just gave the most powerful argument for someone who's verse and is dating someone who's top only to maybe get them to try bottoming. It's for pelvic floor health.
Exactly.
It's for better defecation. Come on, babe.
This is all community based.
Yeah. It's for your total health. But I love that because I think, you know, sometimes people think it's, you know, anal sex is just about like giving someone pleasure, and like it's just so much bigger than that. And so I always like kind of adding on all these other elements, because I work with some people where they reduce it down to just a menial sex act, and why won't my partner get off of that? And it's bigger than that.
Totally. And I think that it takes time also for people to learn how to get off on that. You know, and the initial receptors may actually be diminishing and or painful. And you know, and we'll get to that with some other stuff we talk about. But I think that, you know, anal sex should not be painful. Right. And
that's a profound statement, though, that a lot of people aren't aware of or aren't aware of or also don't know as a way to empower themselves, right? Where they're like afraid of it, or they're having sex that's painful and they don't realize that like we need to stop and like regroup.
Yeah. And I think that that's where setting the stage for success is, how do you analyze all of these things that we spoke about to now allow people to get where they need to go? And that's slow down, lots of lube, use training kits, and kind of do all of these things that will allow people to get to where they need to go. Again, it's a muscle, and it just takes time to train that. Bam. And also the sensations to make sure that it's pleasurable.
Dr. Evan Goldstein of Bespoke Surgical, where can people find you?
The best is Instagram, Bespoke Surgical. You can do Facebook. We're all over the place. I do a lot of blogging on medium.com. Through our offices.
Groups. Beautiful. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Time for question of the night.
Question of the night.
So tonight's question has to do with age gap relationships. I love this one. We talk a lot more these days about ageism here on Loveline, because ageism, something we're all going to be bumping up against. So it's something we all got to work on, because we don't want to wait till later in life when it smacks us in the face. But there's so many ways that we can break this stuff down. But dating is one of those interesting ones where, again, we still get hung up on things like age appropriateness. And again, psychological health and maturity aren't promised based on someone's chronological or biological age, right? So it's really about you appropriate dating, what makes sense for you. And if you're compatible and you have chemistry with someone and they're of age, go do your things. It's just about finding love and being happy. Let's not get hung up on these numbers, but let's see what you all have to say about age gap relationships. First answer, approach with caution. Your age disparate partner could take advantage of you, younger or older. Yes, approach with caution, period. Because whether it's there's an age difference or not, your partner could take advantage of you. The age difference doesn't promise that any more than an age similarity. So we all should just be thoughtful, period. Someone else said, I don't care. Honestly, at this point, economically, I'm looking for a sugar daddy. All right. I support that. We had a sugar baby on our show a couple weeks ago. And beautifully said, he was talking about how he uses his time and attention as an income generator. And he does very, very well, and even funded a fashion line. So, hey, if we can use our intelligence for our job or our bodies as a model, we can use our sexuality too. I'm here for it. Someone else said, as far as their thoughts on age gap relationships, when I was 20, I liked 20-year-olds. I'm 35 and I still like 20-year-olds. Should age change your taste? Not necessarily. If you're finding the people you want to date and you got chemistry and compatibility and there's care and love there, go for it. Got my support. Someone else said, I'm torn because exploitation of youth is so normalized for women, but to each their own. Yeah, I mean, again, unfortunately, in my clinical practice, I see exploitation happening for people that are even the same age, right? It doesn't necessarily come only from people that have a huge age gap, but I hear what you're saying. Someone else said, haven't had luck dating younger, but my ex was 12 years older. Love older men. See? You're a younger person and you like older. You don't feel taken advantage of. We got to be open, y'all. We got to be a little bit more open. Someone else said, if there's a power dynamic, it can be problematic. There should be respect and understanding. Yes, we should all seek that regardless of our ages. Someone else said about age gap relationships, not for me to a certain point. In current conditions, too much of a gap leads to a power imbalance. Well, again, correction, too much of a gap could lead to. Doesn't promise that, because again, people that are in the same age bracket also often have power dynamic problems, because we know that really what creates a power dynamic is whoever generates most income. That tends to be the number one signifier of who will feel most in control and empowered. So we really should be more worried about dating someone who makes more money than us, statistically, not an age-based thing necessarily. So Nell said, don't matter if you're 18. Before that, it does. 10 plus, my age usually gives better conditions. Remember, 18 in some states. In other states, it's 16. And in other states, it's 17. And in other countries, it's even younger than that. So different states and different countries have different age restrictions. It's not 18 for everyone, which is what makes this such an interesting topic, right? Is some cities and states and countries, they think it's 16, you're old enough. Other ones, it's 17 and 18. So again, it speaks to the fact that chronology and biology don't promise anything. All right, what else we got? Let's see here. Age gap relationships, your thoughts on them. Someone said, not for me. Someone else said, age definitely matters, but it's more about your age and maturity, not years. Yes. See, that's what I really want people to take out of this, is that I want people to assess, do we have chemistry and compatibility and care and love? Are we two people that when we come together, we create something that has sustainability and longevity? Also, how mature is this person? Because that's really, really, really what it should be about. The maturity of the people that you're with and not these numbers. Because again, you miss out on something that could possibly be really beautiful. We get hung up on dressing for our body types, dating in a specific age range. And again, God bless my brother. When I ask him these questions, I get the funniest responses. He gave me some magical formula that we're supposed to utilize to determine, I forget what it even was, but like what age plus and minus is going to be best for us. I love these kinds of things. But again, age promises nothing. And that's really what I want people to walk away knowing, that chronology doesn't necessarily speak to maturity. I wish it did. I wish we could know that from the outset, but you got to go on the date. You got to see what happens when you guys sit down and you guys come together and you got to kind of assess, is that what I'm looking for? Because if so, you found your match. And if not, then you didn't find the right person for you. So anyway, we'll be talking more about ageism because, again, this is something that we're all going to encounter and it's coming up as something that a lot of people have to bump into. All right. So thank you, those that participated. We're not able to get to all of them. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. And as always, go on wearechannelq.com. Our show is podcasted. You can go back and listen to old episodes, share, binge it, put me on when you're on the treadmill, whatever you do. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DM is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world, and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. About 5 months ago, I got out of a 10-year relationship. To this day, I'm not interested in sex whatsoever, whether it's with another person or even pleasuring myself. Should I be checked out by a doctor or is it normal? I love how we always run right to the doctor. This would be rooted in something psychological. I'm not worried about some kind of hormonal thing. Hormones don't link directly to sexuality like that. There's so many other factors that interrupt. It's a complex thing. First off, embedded in the question is the assumption that you should want sex with yourself or other people. And that's not true. You know, sexuality is a really healthy drive. Yeah, I do see it as a drive and it's pretty much in constant operation with us. So I would hesitate to say that you have no sexuality. It's possible that it's just not geared towards physicality maybe, but I'm sure you're maybe noticing attractive things in the world or experiencing pleasure in other forms, but maybe not. But nonetheless, no, don't panic. Our sexuality is not constant. It's going to go through phases based on life events, medications, our mood, our levels of confidence, our stress. I don't know what your 10-year relationship was like for you. I don't know what sense of yourself, your body, arousal, pleasure, and sexuality came out of that 10-year relationship with you, right? I don't know if it was tumultuous. I don't know if sex never felt good to you. I don't know if you were body shamed. There's so many pieces there. I don't know if you're pleasure phobic, but there's so much to it. But don't panic. It's okay if we go through phases where we feel like we more identify with something that's a little more less sociable or less sexual. Be where you are. Don't panic. You might even be in this phase for a longer period of time. It might require you getting back into some kind of relationship or partnership for it to get generated. I don't know, but give it more time. Do not panic. Focus on other things. These kinds of things can ebb and flow, but it's not a requirement. You might move forward for the rest of your life feeling less sexual. That's okay. Just be where you're at. You know, circle back though in a few months and check in and let me know how you're doing. But yeah, I'm not concerned. No, nothing to panic about. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. Our questions, they come in from our DMs. So if you got a question, go to our Loveline IG page, slide in those DMs with your question, or you can go to my @Dr. Donahue IG page and we'll definitely get that on the air. Also, we are channelq.com. That's where you can find our show podcasted. All of our shows are podcasted. So we are channelq.com. You can listen to old episodes, binge, post, and share. And also, we post some articles related to some things we talk about, so you can do a little more research. We will be back tomorrow night, so definitely come back and join us. 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right. And now we got to talk to Mr. Jared Hill about election night in late night, which is coming up right now.
Yes, exactly. Tonight is the Iowa caucus, the first of the election nights.
So important.
I know, right? So this is another one of the specials that I'll be hosting. And then on Friday night, we'll have debate night and late night after the New Hampshire debates. But we're getting ready to have our whole crew jump into the studio right now and talk about the Iowa caucuses and what it means for New Hampshire coming up. It's exciting. It's a big night for Democrats and for the country. I do too.
Anxiety.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
All of us do. So we're going to talk about the results, what it means, and what to look forward to.
All right, y'all. That's our show. You can find our show podcasted at wearechannelq.com. We'll be back tomorrow night. Y'all have an awesome night, and thanks for hanging out.